Psalm 84. Many of you are familiar with the poem Footprints, and I know Cathy is one of her favourites, so I'm not out to ruin it for you. But someone has come up with an alternative version. Okay, it's a little bit cheeky. It's called Footprints. Footprints, and I thought I'd share it because it does make some serious points. And it goes like this. One night I had a wondrous dream. One set of footprints there was seen. The footprints of my precious Lord, but mine were not along the shore. But then some stranger prints appeared, and I asked, Lord, what have we here? These prints are large and round and neat, but Lord, they are too big for feet. My child, he said with somber tones, for miles I carried you alone. I challenged you to walk in faith, but you refused and made me wait. You disobeyed, you would not grow. The walk of faith you would not know. So I got tired, I got fed up. And there I dropped you on your butt. Because in life there comes a time when one must fight and one must climb. When one must rise and take a stand or leave their footprints in the sand. Now growing old is inevitable. It's happening to us all. You cannot fight the aging process. Growing up is optional. It's a choice we all have to make on a regular basis. Growing old, inevitable. Growing up, maturing, is optional. And to encourage us in our maturity, in our growing, we're starting this mini-series. Today, growing deeper in God, Psalm 84. Next week, growing deeper in the Bible, Psalm 119. And the following week, growing deeper in prayer, Psalm 86. Pablo Casals, around about the early 1900s, is still considered to be one of the greatest cellists and conductors. Came from Catalonia, that region of Spain. The greatest cellist of all time. When he was 95 years old, he was being interviewed, and a reporter asked him this question. Mr. Casals, you are 95, the greatest cellist that has ever lived, and yet you still practice 6 hours a day. Why? He replied, because I think I am making progress. Because I think I am making progress. Our desires as Christian leaders in this church is that all of us might have that desire to keep on making progress. Whether we're 9 or 95 or 195, we never attain perfection. We're never there here on earth. We're always needing to grow. I guess everyone has said at some time to someone in this room, oh, grow up. Grow up. Or someone has said to us maybe, or we've said it to others, why can't you act your age? Although we normally mean, why can't you act a bit older than you actually are? Growth is natural, and growth is the norm. From the moment you were born, what was one of the first things they did? They smacked you on the bottom, they cleared your breathing airways, and then they weighed you. And you were weighed regularly as a baby. Maybe as a child, you still got on the doorpost at home, marks on the door as you were growing up, and parents marked it with a pencil or a knife, and you could say, look, that's used to be there, but now you're there. Growth is natural. The sign of a healthy child. And if a child is stunted in their growth, it usually means there is something wrong. But this week on the newspapers, we've seen this picture flashed over the newspapers or on the TV. Prince George, off to nursery, age 2. Last time I quoted Prince George in a sermon was 2 years ago at the carol service. And I took the theme, a royal baby, and contrasted Prince George's entry into the world with Jesus. Here he is, not a baby anymore, 2 years old and growing fast. And photos are a reminder that people change. We're always, always aging. We're growing old. But if God takes a photograph of your heart, the question is, are we growing up? Too many churches are full of grey-haired babies. People who are growing old, but they're not actually maturing, growing up spiritually in their faith. The number of years a person has been a Christian does not mean they are growing up. Just means they've been a Christian a long time. It's like the man who went to his boss and demanded a pay rise. And the boss said, why? He said, well, I've been with this company 25 years, doing the same job, drawing the same salary. He said, I've had the same experience for all these years. And the boss said to him, you haven't had 25 years of experience. You've just had one experience for 25 years. And there's a big difference, isn't there? You haven't had 25 years of experience. You've had one experience for 25 years. Psalm 84 says, don't just live on past experiences. Experience the Lord afresh this day, this week, this month, this coming year, if God would spare us. And it gives us different ways, three ways in which we can grow. Here's the first way. The psalmist says, my delight is in the Lord. We ain't going to grow if our affections are in the wrong place. And so often we do that, don't we? I was tempted to bring two plants and say, look, this one has been growing on good water and sunlight. This one's been fed on Coca-Cola and stuck in front of the TV. Which one do you expect to be the healthiest? Well, you're going to say the one that had water and was by the sunlight. But yeah, but the plant enjoys the telly and it loves Coca-Cola. You see, where our desires are don't always mean it's the best place to be. If we're going to grow, we need to set our desires, our delights, our focus in the right person. Look at verse 1 again. How lovely is your dwelling place, Lord Almighty. My soul yearns, even faints, for the courts of the Lord. My heart and my flesh cry out for the living God. Longing is written all over this psalm. When I was studying this, the words of a secular song came to mind. Being in Scotland, maybe that was the influence. Do you remember the Proclaimers? And 500, if you can't remember the song, let me play it to you. I would walk 500 miles and I would walk 500 more just to be the man who walks 1,000 miles to fall down at your door. That's desire. They are singing, look, I would do anything and go to any length to be with the one I love. And that's what this psalm is saying. It's all about desire. Do we really want to be with the Lord? And if so, are we going to walk 500 miles or 1,000 miles? What is our priority in that song again and again? Everything they do is so that he can get to the one he loves. And he doesn't care how much effort it takes to be with the one he loves is what it's all about. And Psalm 84 is as simple and as straightforward as that. A longing, a desire, a determination to be with the one you love. And he begins the psalm by saying, do you know why? Because God is lovely. How lovely is your dwelling place? In Old Testament times, no doubt he had Jerusalem, the temple, in mind. That was where the people met with God in a physical location. And look at the passionate, descriptive, strong words he uses. My soul yearns, even faints, and my heart and my flesh cry out. When did my soul yearn and cry out like that? It happens when you're away from home for long periods of time. You can't wait to get back home and be with the ones you love. And although you're enjoying the experience, actually, you know your heart is really back home. And we get homesick, don't we? And there's a lovely feeling when you're heading home. And a greater feeling when you arrive home. You're back with the ones you love. You've enjoyed what you've done. But there's nothing like being back home. I love the fact he's even jealous of little sparrows and swallows in this psalm. Verse 3, even the sparrow has found a home, and a swallow a nest for herself, where she may have her young a place near your altar. You know, one commentator said, of course, sparrows and swallows don't fly to the temple. This is all nonsense. And you think, it's poetry, it's a song. Engage your brain, understand what type of literature it is. But actually, I think sparrows and swallows probably did build their nest in the rocks. Even today, if you go to the Western Wall, the Wailing Wall, the bottom of those temples, there is loads and loads of places for swallows and birds to build their nest in. There's loads of grass and growth coming out of those stones. But I read this week, a sparrow's nest is messy but cosy. A sparrow adapts its nest from whatever is available from its surroundings. So it may use grass, feathers, leaves, paper, string, anything at all it finds. However, the sparrow's main instinct is to be concerned not with what the nest is made of, but where the nest is located. Is it safe and secure? So it builds a messy nest, but one priority, safety and security. And I love the fact here that it says a sparrow and a swallow. Absolutely worthless birds. He didn't say an eagle. Or think of another beautiful bird of prey. Jesus said of sparrows, he said, look, are not two sparrows sold for a penny? They're worthless. And yet Jesus said in Matthew 10, yet not a single sparrow falls to the ground that God in heaven doesn't take note of. They are worthless as far as the world's concerned, but they are valuable and precious to God. Just like his people. We're pretty worthless, aren't we? Most people out there would probably pity us this morning. Fancy spending an hour and a half together singing songs and looking at an ancient book when you could be at a boot sale, you could be in the supermarket, you could be at a football match, you could be doing all those things. And you saddos are in here doing this. Yet what the world considers precious, God considers worthless. What the world considers wise, God considers foolish. He turns it all around, doesn't he? And not many of us are valuable. We're the dregs of society, aren't we? And yet God brings us together and he makes us valuable because he places within us his Holy Spirit. Are not two sparrows sold, said Jesus. But God notices. And God took notice of you, and you, and you, and you, and you. Now, what a gracious God. And he invited us into his family. And this first section finishes with a benediction in verse 4. In fact, there are three benedictions in this psalm. And verse 4, blessed. That word means happy, contented, enriched, many times over. If your Bible says happy, it's a poor translation. The word blessed means happy, enriched, contented, many times over. Are those who dwell in your house, for they are forever praising you. Listen, the temple was impressive. Even today, if you go to Jerusalem, the first time you get to the old city and you see the walls and you get in and you see the Western Wall and whatever, you see the Dome on the Rock, you go, wow. That is impressive. But the psalmist is not taken up with the architecture. He's taken up with the person who is there. The God who indwells that temple. And he yearns not for architecture, not for a building, but for the living God, the Lord Almighty. Do you know why? Because this God is not distant to him. Look how he describes him. My King, my God. That's the difference, isn't it? My King and my God. Because he knows him, he's experienced him. This is a one-to-one relationship he's had. He's not coming to worship a distant deity. He's coming into the presence of a God he's familiar with. And this verse kind of reads like two lovers. You know when it is, when you can think back to when you went on your first date. And I hope you still go on dates, no matter how long you've been married. And when you go out on a date, actually, it's not where you go that's important. It's who you're with, isn't it? You know, better to be in McDonald's with the one you love than to be in the poshest restaurant in Southampton with somebody else. Maybe you prefer the food these days. I don't. I'd rather be my wife in McDonald's than be you in somewhere else. Because it's the one you love. It's the relationship. That's what counts. And if we want to grow, we must first have the desire to be in his presence. And there's something special about this psalm that I want to emphasize. Did you notice the emphasis in the psalm is not on a private devotion? Of course you can worship the Lord on your own. Of course you can hear from the Lord through his word on your own. Of course you can do lots of things as an individual Christian. But the emphasis here is being with God's people at the temple, worshipping collectively. And the Bible emphasizes that again and again in Old and New Testament. And even in heaven, we're going to be together worshipping God. And you and I can't afford not to spend time in each of us' presence if we want to draw closer to God this year. Matthew 18, verse 20. Jesus said, where two or three are gathered, that's where I am. That's where I am. The Lord is here in a way he's not when you're on your own. And both Judaism and Christianity emphasize community coming together. Luke 4:16, as was his custom. What was the custom of Jesus? To be with the people of God. On a Sabbath he went to synagogue. Do you know why? In case those elders came around and said, we ain't seen you for a while. No. Because as bad habits stick, so do good ones. And we need to get into the habit of meeting together on a Sunday, on a Thursday, whenever we can. And make it a custom. It was for Jesus. If Jesus needed to meet with God's people regularly, so do you and I. The Apostle Paul, probably the greatest Christian who ever lived, Acts 17 verse 2, as was his custom. Where was he on the Sabbath with the people of God? In the synagogue. And just as bad habits shape our lives, so do good habits. Talking of habits, I did hear the story of an elderly couple, Mr. and Mrs. Smith. And Mrs. Smith was so happy because after years and years of that annoying habit, Mr. Smith biting his nails, she cured him. She cured him of it. And someone said, how did you cure your husband of biting his nails? She said, easy, I've started to hide his teeth. They're just like bad habits stick and they're hard to break. So do good habits stick. And they help to shape us. And the New Testament tells us you need to meet together, to learn together, to live together, to pray together, to share together, to serve together, to give together, to worship together, to evangelize together. So that's the first bit. I've labored that one. The next two are a bit shorter. Hey, my strength is in the Lord. Verse 5 to 8. My strength is in the Lord. Blessed, happy, enriched, contented, many times over, are those whose strength is in you, whose hearts are set on pilgrimage. As they pass through the valley of Baca, they make it a place of springs. The autumn rains also cover it with pools. They go from strength to strength, till each appears before God in Zion. The psalmist obviously can't get to where God's people are. He's away from the temple. He wants to go on a pilgrimage. He wants to get to Jerusalem to worship God. And if you go, he says, you've got to go through the valley of Baca. See, getting to Jerusalem was an exhilarating experience, but it was tough. It was tough. It's hard work. We went as tourists, and just walking Jerusalem, if you've never been, is a really hilly place. Everywhere you go, you're walking up or you're walking down. Very little of it is flat. So if you go down to where the Church of the Beatitudes is, you suddenly look and you think, wow, I've got a big hill to get all the way back to Jaffa Gate. It's hard work walking up and down hills in the hot sunshine, and just getting up to Jerusalem. It's hard work in a hot, dry country. And David didn't have a Zimmer frame or a wheelchair. He may have been able to sit on a donkey now and again, but most people walked. It was exhilarating, but it was hard. It took a sacrifice to make a pilgrimage. You sacrificed time. Instead of working, you took a couple of weeks off to get to Jerusalem. It cost you money. Instead of earning, you were spending on the way there, food, accommodation. There was a sacrifice involved in getting to the temple. And if we want to grow in God, we want to discover his strength in our lives, there is a sacrifice. Leonard Ravenhill used to say, an experience of God that costs nothing, does nothing, and is worth nothing. An experience of God that costs nothing, does nothing, and is worth nothing. And even Davis the psalmist wrote, when talking about sacrifices, I will not present a burnt offering that has cost me nothing. 1 Chronicles 21 and 24. David wasn't looking, what can I get out of this? He was thinking, what can I give to the Lord? What can I give to the Lord? And as we give, so we receive. He's our priority. We focus on him. It's like a boomerang. The blessing comes back on us. If we just go to take, then it's like candy floss. It's sweet, it's nice for a bit, and it fizzles out. And they had to go through the valley of Baca. No one knows where Baca is or what Baca was. Most scholars say the verb means to weep. It's a state of misery. So Baca is a place of suffering and sorrow, which seems at odds with the psalm. Because three times it's talking about happiness. Verse 4, blessed, happy are those who are in your house singing your praise. Verse 5, blessed, happy are those whose strength is in you. Verse 7, blessed, happy is everyone who trusts in you. But actually, we draw our strength when we're weak. We draw our strength from God when we're weak. The tree that never had to fight for sun and sky and air and light, that stood out in the open plain and always got its share of rain, never became a forest king, but lived and died a scrubby thing. The man who never had to toil to heaven from the common soil, who never had to win his share of sun and sky and light and air, never became a manly man, but lived and died as he began. Good timber does not grow at ease, the stronger wind, the tougher trees, the farther light, the greater length, the more the storm, the more the strength, but sun and cold by rain and snows, in tree or man, good timber grows. Where thickest stands the forest growth, we find the patriarchs of them both. And they hold converse with the stars, whose broken branches show the scars of many winds and of much strife. This is the common law of life. In other words, hey, even when we go through tough times, we still grow. That's the difference between a Christian and someone who's not a Christian. Problems, often people fall apart. They've got no strength, they've got no hope. Christians have not only God to help them through those problems, but we put on spiritual muscle and backbone. We grow closer to God. We grow stronger in our faith through difficulties. Samuel Rutherford, I love this quote. He said, when I'm in the cellar of affliction, I look to the Lord for the choicest wines. Isn't that good? When I'm in the cellar of affliction, I look to the Lord for his choicest wines. And then lastly, he says, my trust is in the Lord. Verse 9. Look on our shield, O God. Look with favour on your anointed one. Better is one day in your courts than 1,000 elsewhere. I would rather be a doorkeeper in the house of my God than dwell in the tents of the wicked. For the Lord is a sun and shield. The Lord bestows favour and honour. No good thing does he withhold from those whose way of life is blameless. Lord Almighty, blessed is the one who trusts in you. Wow. I love verse 10. Better is one day in your courts than 1,000 elsewhere. He'd rather have a lowly, menial job as a doorkeeper than be in the palace with the wicked. Because he knows his God, my God, my King. See, none of us will trust a stranger, will we? If you're walking home at the end of the service and you notice a car is following you and you speed up and the car speeds up and you slow down and the car slows down. Don't want to make you nervous, all right? It's only a story. It's not going to happen. So you're walking and this car's tailing you and then all of a sudden it drives alongside and the guy presses his window and the window comes down and he leans over and he's unshaven and grubby looking character and he looks over and says, hello, darling. Fancy lift. You're going to be mental. if you say, oh, yes, please, you're going to say, no, thank you, I'm enjoying the fresh air, or you're going to say, quick, help! You're not going to get in a car with a stranger. It's one of the first things we teach our kids, isn't it? Don't talk to strangers. But if you're walking home and a car comes alongside and it's blue and the window pulls down and it's Martin Fielder behind the wheel and he says, oh, hi, would you like a lift? Chances are you'll say, no, thank you. No, you wouldn't. Yes, oh, yeah, please, my legs are killing me, or it's raining, or it's cold. Yeah, I can't wait. What's the difference? You know him. Because you know him, you trust him. He wants to do you good, not harm. And the psalmist says, I trust in the Lord because he does me good, not harm. Not one good thing does he withhold. Hey, he meets my needs. Not always my greeds, but he meets my needs. You know, when I ran a weekly market stall at Perham Market, I was there for 10 years selling Christian books and Bibles and other second-hand books. And ladies of a certain generation, more mature ladies, would come along and they'd say, do you have any promise boxes these days? Now, I had no idea what a promise box was, but then I suddenly started getting them. And it was bizarre because people were asking for them. And really, they were little boxes, like a box of chocolates. You took the lid off and they were like strips of paper that someone had wound around a pencil. So they were little tubes, curled tubes, and stuck in this box. You might have, I don't know, 20 or 50 or 100, and on it was a promise from the Bible. And at ladies' meetings, I think they used to pull one out each week and read it as their promise for the week. Or you could have one at home. Seemed to me like a Christian horoscope. You kind of just, each day, pulled one out and claimed it for yourself, whatever in the context. But promise boxes. And there's a story told of a lady who had a promise box, and she took the lid off and she went to pull out a promise, but as she did, she dropped it and the promises went all over the floor. And as she looked at them, God just put it in her heart, actually, all of my promises are true all of the time. Not a lucky dip with God. All of his promises, if they're applicable for us, are true all of the time. And the psalmist latches on to this. And he says, therefore I will trust in you, Lord. Better is one day with you, a God who is true and faithful and dependable and gives me all I need, than to be with the wicked. So, conclusion. If you want to grow in God this year, long for God's house. Well, long for God's presence, first of all. But the psalmist emphasises, as does the rest of the scriptures, there's a special blessing of being in God's house with God's people. Appreciate God's blessings, whether they're good or bad, whether you're on the mountaintop or in the valley. Enjoy the blessedness of trusting him. Each day, focus upon him. Let me finish with this quote from Martin Luther, the great reformer. Let the world have rich ones, powerful ones, wise ones, and consultations of this world. Let them trust and glory in their wisdom, might, wealth and possessions. My heart triumphs in the living God. May that be true for each one of us. Let's pray.